Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Thank you, Kim.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. You can just call me the Wizard of Woke. Oh, wait, that's Kendrick Lamar. We'll talk about his damn album and why that won a Pulitzer with somebody who knows music better than me. No, that wasn't a difficult person to find. Also on the show today, we'll keep you posted on that Starbucks story and anything else. It's happening out of the Sean Hannity story, which was just kind of bizarre and fun and strange, and I'm still not sure how important. But before we get to any of these important things, can I just tell you something that I got in the mail today? Our listeners are the nicest people. I don't know if it's this way in the newsroom, Kim, but sometimes people will send us gifts or things that they'll say, hey, I know you're into this. Here's some of that.
So many nice listeners. We get so many nice cards for the holidays. People always, remember us.
Isn't it sweet?
It's very nice.
And if it's an email or an old school thing in the mail, that you consider
that makes it even sweeter because you know somebody put the extra effort into it.
I know. And sometimes people will purchase things for us. Like one time I said that my favorite jelly beans are the red ones.
Oh,
and I didn't
gosh.
Know why they would put the pink or yellow ones in a bag because those are the last ones eaten. If there's a bag of jelly beans in a jar, people pick out the black, the red, the orange. And then you get down to the green, the pink, the yellow.
I like the green, the pink, the yellow.
Me too.
Well, that's the funny thing. So everybody has their favorites. I said, to me, it's a no-brainer. Everybody wants the red jelly beans. One of our listeners got a jar and filled it with red jelly beans.
Do you think they picked out all the other ones? It took them like 3 months to save all the red ones? Or
I'm going to assume that this was the way it appeared, they said, John likes jelly beans. They went to the store. They bought a whole bunch of bags. Cherry picked out the red ones, presumably while wearing plastic gloves, and then put them in a jar and sent it to me. And I just thought that was so nice. So all of that to say this. Brenda and I have a couple of wiener dogs. We've had dachshunds ever since Grant first wanted a dog. And when one goes, we get another one. And now we're in the wiener dog cycle and we can't get out of it.
Do you have long hair or short hair? I grew up with a long hair.
Yeah, we had Oscar was a long hair, but most of them have been short hair.
Okay.
I've got two short hair ones living in my house right now. Do you want them? So then in the mail today comes one of these little like porcelain collector painted dogs, and in this case he's got like a cowboy hat on and he's like a rough rider or something like that, and it's a wiener dog in a costume, and I guess it's a collectible. And I thought, these little stores are just so nice. So then I opened it up to see who it came from, and there was this note. Dear Mr. Williams, congratulations on your acquisition of Cher Ruff S. Paws. Using your credit card can be the easiest way to pay for your collectible. And I'm like, oh? It says, of course, you can pay by check or money order. We are confident that Cher Ruff S. Paws will meet your full satisfaction. That is why we cover each issue, each one of these things, with our 365-day unconditional guarantee. You can return this product within 1 year for a full refund. I can send it back for a full refund. I just like destroyed the packaging that came with it and threw it all in the garbage. You're telling me I'm supposed to send this back if I don't want it? Does everybody know what just happened? And if so, what has happened? Because I thought somebody sent me something or gave me something. It looks like this company sends you the thing. You open up and go, oh, it's a wiener dog. And I don't know how they knew I love wiener dogs, but this is a smart fishing on their part. So now I've got the thing, and then it says you owe us $42.98. I don't want to send them $42.98. I don't even want to take the time to package it back up and mail it back to them, period. And I don't intend to. Now, I don't think they have my credit card information, but it sounds like what they do is they just send these things to people, figuring they'll pay for them. I have no intention of doing either, paying for it or sending it back. I don't even know how much I love, or want to have this tchotchke in my house. We're trying to downsize. But has anybody else been so fortunate as to receive something in the mail like this, and then you have to pay for it down the road? Not you, Violetta. Not you, Steve Bertrand. Not Elif.
Well, but sometimes you do sign up for a free trial.
That's what I'm thinking.
That you have to.
I know.
Then you're signed up for a year.
I've got magazines. I signed up for the MLB package on a recurring.
Oh, that's the worst.
And then I didn't even know. And then it goes, congratulations, you have another year of this service for $100. I didn't want it really at all.
Right. You use the promotion and then.
I know. That's why whenever
you sign up for a 3-year contract.
I know. Whenever somebody goes, well, you can just, all you got to do is click out or call this number, and but you might as well take it for 3 months for free. And it's a magazine or jelly of the month or whatever. I just go, no, because I know it's a great deal for 3 months. I know you will get me for 3 years before I notice. So no, thank you.
I know.
But I guarantee you, there's no way I'm signing up for the Hamilton Collection Wiener Dog Collectibles. That just did not happen.
When did you even think that sentence would come out of your mouth?
I know. I can with confidence say I did not sign up for the Hamilton Collection Wiener Dog Collectibles. I did not do that.
You're going to have to call your credit card company and repeat that a couple of times.
I know that, but this is the funny thing about this. It's got a client number and an order number there and a blah, 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 but it doesn't know. It looks like it doesn't know what my credit card number is. So they sent it to you. Notice this first sentence says, congratulations on your acquisition. It's not your gift and it's not your purchase. It's your acquisition. Congratulations on your acquisition. So I have this thing that they sent me in the mail. And now they said the easiest way to pay for it will be this way, this way, or this way. And if you don't like it, you can send it back after 365 days. Really? No questions asked. I'm not going to say.
You're like, I have a question. How did I get this?
Yeah, who are you and what kind of scam is this? I wonder what the rate of return on these things is. Like, they must figure out if for every 100 of these things we send in the mail, a third of 33 of them will be purchased, 33 of them will be returned, and 33 of them will be acquired with no purchase, and that's just our loss. But we can make it on the 33 that will decide to buy it. That must be what they think, right? For $42 times 33, that's $1,200 they're going to make. And they'll make $1,200 on sending 100 of them in the mail. I mean, I think that must be what this is. So I think I'm safe to keep it, and I think I'm safe to not pay for it. But I just wondered if you ran into anything similar to this, what your thoughts are.
Have you examined it for any Wi-Fi or Bluetooth capabilities?
Why do you ask?
Well, maybe they just wanted an eavesdrop in your home.
Right.
Further monitor your dog's capabilities.
It's kind of weird, though, Steve, because this is like traditional snail mail. I mean, it came in the mail. This didn't pop up on my Facebook page, say. So some company out there, though, knows that Brendan and I have rescue wiener dogs and always have. And then, lo and behold, this thing popped. How did they know that? How did they know to send me that? It didn't come up in my, you know, digital space. It came up in my business mail.
I think people with rescue wiener dogs have a very distinct profile, and you probably leave your thumbprint in places where you wouldn't imagine.
You mean like we come up to people and go, hi, we have rescue wiener dogs.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that wiener dog need rescuing?
Usually I think a lot of us who have rescued wiener dogs are then trying to unload the rescued wiener dogs. That's not true. Wiener dogs are wonderful. I love my dogs. It'd be nice if my dogs loved me. Okay. Well, anyway, if you have anything to share along those lines, I'd be kind of interested at 312-981-7200. Operators are standing by. Just a real quick note on the Sean Hannity-Michael Cohen saga. I'm reading from CNN today. And Hannity is downplaying his legal relationship, saying Cohen never represented me in any legal manner. He said the two men chatted occasionally and his questions focused almost exclusively on real estate. Hannity said, I never retained his services. I never received an invoice. I never paid Michael Cohen for legal fees. But if that's true, then why did Cohen's lawyer identify Hannity as a client in federal court?
And
what's this all about?
And
then?
Because it was over documents somehow, right? So the implication is that, no, whatever. The implication is that there are documents that exist, because that was the that's what the hearing was about, you know, documents seized, which would be used or which could the government see in its prosecution.
Right.
So if by Sean Hannity's account it was a cocktail conversation or something, then whatever it was, seemed the implication is that it led to the production of documents, whether it's email or whatever.
Okay,
right?
I mean, what kind of documents? Because, again, if it's Sean Hannity and Michael Cohen real estate or tax or whatever legal documents you have, that's a private matter. So I don't.
Well, it could be just email documents as in just email back and forth. Or,
okay, but I still don't see why the government needs to see Sean Hannity stuff unless somehow Michael Cohen is the pivot person between the Trump campaign and Sean Hannity.
Yeah, I don't think anyone
things
said
are going through him to them.
I don't think the government has said they need to see the documents. The hearing yesterday was about
keeping Sean Hannity private.
Yeah, keeping it out of the case. And yeah. The judge said, "Well, who are your clients?" And
well, since they're all such swell pals, though, I mean, Cohen represents Hannity and Trump, and Hannity has Cohen on his show a lot, and Hannity says good things about Cohen and Trump. I don't know where. Yesterday, Steve, you posed to me, "Well, would you want to be in the mix of this?" I said no, but I don't see why Sean Hannity would mind, because Sean Hannity swims in the same stream with these guys.
Well, Sean Hannity, and we'll see what happens, but on a lot of networks would have a lot of trouble right now because
he didn't disclose.
He's railing against this raid and didn't mention the fact that the person raided was his lawyer.
Yeah.
And even Alan Dershowitz last night called him on that on his show.
Dershowitz said, "I really think you should have disclosed your relationship with Cohen when you talked about him on this show." There's Hannity with, you know, saying this kind of thing is off the rails. This is a rogue federal prosecutor who's out to impeach the president. And here's Michael Cohen to talk about it some more. And Cohen's a great guy, too. And he's doing this for weeks on end, not saying that Cohen is his attorney. I think if he said Cohen's his attorney, he still gets to do all of that.
Absolutely. Exactly. You know, he represented me in a minor real estate thing.
I love how Hannity put it. He said, I may have thrown $10 at him. I don't know what that means. Well, really? You retained his service for $10? I'll bet you didn't. So what does "I may have thrown $10 at him" mean? And why are you asking for confidentiality? I don't have the answer to these questions.
Well, he's not being
quite complete or full.
Yeah, I hate the word transparent. He doesn't owe us transparency.
Right.
But if him saying "I might have thrown $10 at him" is obfuscating whatever really happened, because we know that didn't happen.
Right, because you either have zero or you're in. It's right. It's like being pregnant, Sean. You're either in or you're not. Hey, Cheryl, this is John. You're on WGN. What can you do for us?
Hi. I ended up with a free lawnmower after I won one on a Facebook contest.
Yeah. They sent you a lawnmower?
Well, I won one, and 2 weeks later, another one showed up on my deck. And I contacted Toro, and they said, "Well, get in touch with the people that had the contest." So I got in touch with them, and they said, "Well, keep it. It was mine to do with whatever I wanted." So I have I had two free $500 lawnmowers.
Some contest that you entered on Facebook?
Right. I won the first one, and then they sent me a second one 2 weeks later.
And you never got sucked into a bill or anything else?
Well, they kind of tried to get me to send back the second one, but I sent them the email that the guy sent me that said, "Keep it, do whatever you want with it."
I'd give my address and say, "If you want to come and get it, you can," but I didn't have. You know, it's funny because you see those things and you go, "That's a scam. Ain't nobody winning a lawnmower." You want a lawnmower?
I want a lawnmower, $500 Toro lawnmower.
Huh. Cheryl, thanks for the call. Hey, Don, this is John. You're on WGN.
Hey, I went through a similar situation a few years ago. I received some books in the mail that I had not ordered. And so I took them back to the post office trying to just return them without my paying the return postage.
Yep.
And for one thing, they would not do that because I had opened the package. But they said, if you did not order it, you do not have to pay for it.
So you kept the books and that was the end of it?
keep the books. That was the end of it. They kept sending me letters. I told them exactly what I was told by the post office. What the post office had told me at the time was keep the packaging just to prove everything, that it was through the USPS, not UPS, something like that. I don't know what United Parcel regulations are.
Yeah.
But if it came through the postal system, it's yours to keep.
Thank you for the phone call. It's 128 on WGN. Lots of calls about this. Well, if I go to jail, I think actually I am getting another wiener dog. It said, wait till you see the next one. If they want to keep sending me collectible wiener dogs, I'm okay with it, but I'm not paying. I do not intend to pay for them. Karis Lamb is on a phone line, senior writer at Consequence of Sound. We're talking about Kendrick Lamar and the Pulitzer Prize. First time that's gone to somebody in popular rap or hip-hop music, for goodness sakes. Karis, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry about that.
That sounds a little bit better. So we were just talking about him. You said that he really became a voice of the Black Lives Matter movement, and that his music, as I understand it also, Karis, has been politically charged all along, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, just to speak a little bit to his experience as somebody who's coming out of a city like Compton, California, you are, you know, inner city America, you know, a lot of wealth gap, you know, issues, a lot of, you know, food desert issues in cities across this, you know, the country that people deal with, and you don't necessarily always hear it on record. And so those are the things that fuel activism as easily as they fuel rap. And I think that, you know, his music just happens to pick up on, you know, the creative side of it. But I think that the movement and the music are, you know, symbiotic, if
yeah.
that makes any sense.
No, I get that. But I'm also thinking plenty of rap and hip-hop artists sing about life in the city, about deprivation, about crime, violence, the police, life. So what is he saying maybe that merits a Pulitzer Prize?
I think the really interesting thing for me, and I don't know if maybe everyone else would say this, is that he approaches it from his own personal experience. He embodies a lot of different characters in his life within the span of one album, and does so to the point that he even puts on different voices. And he also does something really interesting in that he talks a lot about life and death, and, you know, the destruction of the black body, which isn't necessarily talked about with so much nuance and so much compassion for the souls that are actually being lost, you know, in you know, inner city America. And so you get to sort of step into the shoes of somebody who is running around with a target on their back and to, you know, live that life a little bit instead of just hearing about it.
Yeah.
It's more, you know, first-person art.
I think it's easy for some of us who don't listen to this kind of music or appreciate it to dismiss it as not being that smart either, you know? And and I'm guessing that he's very intelligent, that he's not only articulating these things, but that this is a bright guy with something to say.
Yeah, he has something to say, but he also writes in a very cinematic manner. And so I think the narrative in that way becomes easier to follow. But then also he challenges the listener in that he's not really championing, you know, a gangster lifestyle as much as he's questioning it. He's not really, you know, championing excess as much as he's questioning it. He puts all these things into his music, but he also puts these really existential philosophical questions in that, you know, I think no matter where you come from in the world, what your lifestyle is, what your background or, you know, economic status is, that they're going to force you to look at the life that you're leading and the people that you're around and examine the world with a bigger view and more compassion.
New Kung Fu Kitty.
I got so many theories and suspicions. I'm diagnosed with real conditions. Today,
some of the music that he does, I can listen to, I can appreciate, and then some of it I positively can't. It's just not in my wheelhouse. This I like. Who's listening to Kendrick Lamar?
I think a lot of people. I mean, you know, I'm a black person that grew up in an inner city, and I listen to him. I know people who are like me who don't, but I also know people from lots of other different backgrounds that listen to him and really appreciate his music. In fact, when the Pulitzer news broke yesterday, I was in a group chat with some friends of mine who are journalists and, you know, photographers and just general creative professionals, and everybody's from different backgrounds and, you know, different ethnic groups, and we all were discussing it very passionately and very much interested in, you know, revisiting the project and the project before To Pimp a Butterfly, and really talking about the importance of both projects and, you know, how they spoke to us as individuals.
I guess this isn't, was it a shock to the group, or he had been previously nominated, so maybe did you all think it's just a matter of time?
Honestly, we were sort of arguing about why it was this album and not To Pimp a Butterfly. Like, what made the difference? But I think, you know, in the same way that if this is a weird comparison, but if you look at, you know, Martin Luther King's speech where he talks about having been to the mountaintop, in a way, Kendrick Lamar does the same thing with Damn, where he takes you into this world where, you know, he sort of ascended all of these traps and pitfalls that, you know, were set out for him, and he's gotten to the mountaintop, and then he gets there and he realizes, you know, he's still going to face, you know, the inevitability of violence and death and blackness in America. And so it sort of forces you to look at, you know, who he is and where he's coming from and what he's talking about, and to appreciate life, I think, the lives of people that aren't necessarily always amplified in a way that you might not otherwise be inclined to do so.
Sometimes it's the body of work, too. I mean, it's that way with any award, the Academies, the Oscars, the Pulitzers, maybe. What you turned in this year may be worthy, but if you wonder why the previous work didn't get it, sometimes you just have to pay your dues. And so if you keep, you know, friends of mine in the newspaper business have won Pulitzers, and they were submitting for years. And I wonder if that's kind of what's happened here with Kendrick.
I think, yes, that may be true. And also evolution, you know what I mean? So as an artist, yeah, you're constantly evolving and pushing the limits, and maybe this was the project that did it correctly.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I mean, evolution, I thought maybe this is what you mean. It's about time the Pulitzer didn't get so stuffy that it doesn't just have to be for classic and jazz. The evolution of the Pulitzer Prize for Music could include, lo and behold, Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important also as a moment for hip-hop, but also American literature. Hip-hop is a form of literature. It falls under, you know, the celebrated tradition, you know, in Black and African households of, you know, oral history, right? So now we've been used to all our lives passing stories down by word of mouth. So now that tradition is amplified. But then also, you know, rap is a classic American art form. It's just one of the younger ones. And so it's appropriate that it starts to be recognized in the space with classical music, with jazz, with blues, as something that is of value, because it was written off for quite some time.
Oh, I think it's still being written off by some people, but I think you make your point well. But I mean, all right, so let's listen to another cut here. I'll hit it. Hey, I remember syrup sandwiches and when you talk about art and hip-hop or rap, and some of us hear this, we don't hear the art in this as much as we do and even some of the other cuts that we played. I mean, Karis, do you appreciate that? Do you think, wow, that's terrific, that's great art, that's great music, and that's worthy of a Pulitzer?
Yeah, I do, but I will say that, you know, some things are more difficult than others. And I think that the things that may resonate with people who like music that rattles the trunks of their cars may not resonate with somebody who, you know, wants to go and see a string quartet. And so I think that there is gray area and there's room where those things do meet, but you have to be willing to sort of listen to music that challenges you. And I think, you know, also when you get into things like the major radio system and pop music isn't always necessarily built to challenge people. And so rap exists sort of hand in hand with pop music, but rap can also be difficult. It can be, you know, nuanced. It can be full of things that aren't necessarily easy to swallow, and not because they're always violent or excessive or anything like that. But, I mean, art is like that. When you go to art galleries, art isn't always going to be pleasing, but sometimes you can, you know, look at a piece that jars you and appreciate it for having done that because it changes your perspective or gets you to grow a little bit. I think that growth requires discomfort, and if, you know, Kendrick's music, even in the moments where it isn't as melodic or beautiful, can do that, then he's doing something right.
Kara Slam is a senior writer at Consequence of Sound. Kendrick Lamar wins the Pulitzer Prize. Karis, you're terrific. I enjoy your website, too. Only recently discovered it. We'll call you again. I appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
All right, I'm ticked.
Here's John Williams.
Here's why. Later this afternoon, Ro Khan's going to have James Comey on, so I'm really happy for him.
Lord have mercy.
And the whole station, hooray. That'll be great for Ro. Adida. Well, you know, another big guest on the afternoon show. On the one. I'm not kidding. Ro's going to jump on with us in about 12 minutes here. They scored an interview with James Comey. This isn't a wacky radio bit. James Comey, author of A Higher Loyalty, he's this guy that's been in the news a lot. He's going to be on with our Ro Khan. Ro will give us the details at 2:20. Chapter 10, first sentence from the book that's in front of me. I have never met Hillary Clinton, although I tried. He's never even met Hillary Clinton. He also reveals in the book that he didn't vote in the last election. I'm going to ask Ro if he can get Comey to say this. This is what radio stations do when they score a big guest. He'll go, "Hi, I'm James Comey. And whenever I'm in Chicago and not in jail, I listen to the John Williams Show on WGN.
I mean, some nice things to ask Comey about because he sort of expanded on that, the president saying he should be in jail and things like that today.
Yeah, no kidding. Although I'm looking at the tweets and I don't see the word jail. Did the he called him a slime ball. He said he wasn't an honest person. Did President Trump literally say that James Comey should be jailed? Elif, you got to find that exact word. Where does the president say, I never asked Comey for personal loyalty. I hardly ever knew the guy. Just another many of his lies. His memos are self-serving and fake, the president tweeted. Unbelievably, James Comey states that polls where crooked Hillary was leading were a factor in the handling, stupidly, of the Clinton email probe. In other words, he was making decisions based on the fact that he thought she was going to win, and he wanted a job slime ball.
Well, it might not have been him Comey either, specifically. The quote I read or saw from Comey was that when he says Americans should be put in prison.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have been talking about McCabe or pick someone.
Somebody. Somebody's got to go to jail. It's 2:10. This is WGN Radio. Ro jumps in here in a couple of minutes. Lou Manfredini does right now. He's our Mr. Fix-It. Hi, Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini.
I thought for sure you were going to say Ro Khan is going to have James Comey, and you were super excited about that. But you were going to say, but I have Lou Manfredini.
Hey, would you... We're recording this right now. Would you say, hey, I'm Lou Manfredini, and whenever I'm in Chicago, I listen to John Williams?
Hi, I'm Lou Manfredini, and whenever I'm in Chicago, I listen to John Williams.
That's good, Lou. Can you do it now like you wanted to?
Hi, I'm Lou Manfredini, and whenever I'm in Chicago, I listen to Steve Bertrand.
Yeah,
that's fine.
It's 2:11. Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini, wears many hats. You hear him Saturday morning, of course, on WGN Radio and on many of our shows, answering timely questions about how to maintain your home and your world. He's our Mr. Fix-It. But he does more than that. We do not have a more civic-minded or charitable person, maybe on this staff, than you, sir. And I know you've got something coming up that you're working on. In fact, there's a link to it on our website. What's this candy jar you're doing?
Well, you're very kind. I am just happy to be an instrument for Misericordia. Those that listen to the show on a regular basis know that my family is very committed to the work that Misericordia does. It's a home on the north side of Chicago, a campus, really, that is a home to 600 adults and children with developmental disabilities, from profound to high functioning, And it truly is one of the most unique places in the country, if not the world. And they do a fundraiser at the end of every April, their Candy Days. And you'll see volunteers throughout the Chicagoland area raise money. And it is their single biggest fundraiser. And, you know, rain or shine, there are these volunteers who are so committed to helping Misericordia church groups and school groups and individuals that are out there collecting any kind of donation you possibly can. We created a virtual candy jar, not unlike it was inspired by your virtual kettle that you do with the Salvation Army.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you go to WGNradio.com and you go to my page there, there's a giving page that's set up, and people can make a donation of any amount to this virtual jar. Our goal is $5,000, and our friends at Townstone Financial are going to make a matching donation of $5,000. So we have the potential to raise $10,000, and we've had people already be so generous and making donations, whether it's $5, $10, $100, anything you can do to continue the work of Misericordia that helps people from all over the country, really, that are residents there, would be greatly appreciated.
When's the candy day, Lou? When are they out actually collecting?
The last weekend in April, I believe it's the 26th and 27th. So it'll be that Friday and that Saturday all day. So I tell people now, you know, all that change you have in your car that, you know, there's no more parking meters anymore. Why do you need all that change? You don't. So get it all in a cup, and when you see those folks, you make a donation, right?
Nice.
And you'll give them the change, and then they'll give you a little packet of Jelly Bellies, who have been fine sponsors and supporters of Misericordia, I think, for the past 15 years.
I got a change jar in my closet. It weighs about 18 pounds. I'll just hold it out the window and hand it to them.
Right. Think about this. You know how they say banks now, yet they charge you to count your change?
Yeah.
You donated to Misericordia, no charge.
And you get the Jelly Bellies, which is like...
And you get the Jelly Bellies. So last weekend in April, and if you want to go to WGNradio.com, click on Lou Manfredini, and you'll see the virtual candy jar, and you can make a donation right then and there. And on behalf of Misericordia and my entire family, God bless you all and thank you.
Hey, before you go, though, so does this match then expire April 26, 27? We want to get the money in the kitty by then, I presume.
We do, yeah. So if you can get there before Candy Days, it's going to run through the end of April, so we got a couple days, but the goal is to reach our goal by Candy Days, by the weekend of. And as I mentioned, Townstone Financial is going to match it with another $5,000. So we really have a great opportunity here to raise a lot of money. They're being very generous in supporting this virtual candy jar.
What number are you at right now? Have you checked lately?
I believe the last time I checked, we're just shy of $2,200.
$2,200. All right, we want to get at least to $5,000.
I haven't gotten the donation yet from Steve Bertrand Travel, where you can go to stevebertrandtravel.com to book all of your events for, you know, six people and up. If you want to go anywhere, Steve Bertrand Travel can make that happen for you.
I'm sorry, I just was away from the microphone. What'd you say, Lou?
Go to Steve Bertrand Travel.
No. Okay, there. They just heard a ka-ching somewhere.
Yeah, and it's
an
your pocket,
just
my
got
friend.
Its wings.
Your pocket. All right, so WGNradio.com, click on the Lou Manfredini page. Elif also said, or just search candy jar in our search bar, but maybe easiest, just go to your page, Lou, and you say you've got a giving link right there, right?
We do. It's real, real simple. So thank you so much, John, for the time, and thanks for helping to promote this.
Well, let's do it every day. You're $2,200 now. Let's check in tomorrow and the next day, and I've got time, Lou. Let's help you get to the people at Misericordia. I mean, that's what this is all about, of course. Let's help them get to...
It's all about Misericordia. You're not giving the money to me. You're giving it to them.
And one last thing. One of the great things about this donation campaign, no dancing will take place. No one has to go to lessons. No one has to wear fancy shoes. No one will have to play videos for strangers.
No. And my knees feel fantastic.
All right. I'll talk to you later, Mr. Fix-It.
Love you.
That's our Lou Manfredini. Elif just handed me the tweet in question, April 15th, 2 days ago. Donald Trump tweeted, "The big questions in Comey's badly reviewed book aren't answered, like how come he gave up cloud." Oh, boy, Roe could ask him these questions. The president said, "These questions aren't answered, like how come he gave up classified information, parentheses, jail. Why did he lie to Congress? Jail. Why did the DNC refuse to give the server to the FBI? Why didn't they take it? Why the phony memos, McCabe's $700,000 and more?" I read this to somebody and they said, "What?" I said, "Never mind. It doesn't matter." But there it is. Twice the reference to jail. You know, and I'm not exactly sure what that means, but presumably that means James Comey should be in jail for giving up classified information and lying to Congress. I get it. So what about that? Ro Khan talks to James Comey this afternoon. Ro's going to jump in with us in just a couple of minutes. We'll prep him for that interview. Ro Khan joins us now on WGN, getting ready for his show at 3. Hi, Ro.
Hello, John.
James Comey's going to be on your show?
James Comey, we just actually did the sit-down with James Comey a few minutes ago.
Oh, I was going to give you some questions to ask and some things I wanted him to say.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was a last-minute availability, and so we are actually scheduled to do it tomorrow with him, and then they called and they were like, "He's only got 10 minutes right now,
go."
So he's a little in demand, so it worked out pretty well.
Well, but I presume you were aware of the kind of back and forth between him and the president today. What did you guys talk about?
Well, we talked about how he feels about, you know, what's going on here, how his family has been impacted. And I do get to ask him this question. Listen to this, John.
All right.
Were you as surprised as the rest of the country was that Sean Hannity was actually one of Michael Cohen's clients? The rest of that answer coming up after 5:40 today.
And he's laugh. Okay, I can predict the answer based on that laugh. Could I get that soundbite one more time?
Were you as surprised as the rest of the country was that Sean Hannity was actually one of Michael Cohen's clients?
Hold on. Based on that, it's kind of like I have this special skill of triangulation. Remember when I was able to guess accurately your total annual bill for Starbucks coffee?
Yes. Yes, you did. Yeah.
Stand by.
Hold on.
Based on that chuckle, what he's going to tell you is that he's a little surprised because he had no way of knowing who Michael Cohen's clients are, but it's just funny to him because it's funny, all of the people that are sort of lining up, the stars are lining up almost predictably, but he did not know that he was one of his clients. Final answer.
I hope that answer wasn't that long in the interview because it was all the time.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate the support there.
Well, what about the jailing? Did you broach that subject?
Yeah, we talk about his, you know, how he's reacting to all of this.
Yeah, no kidding. Did you get a sense, like, I guess he's not surprised by what's transpired, right?
No. No, I think it's really clear that he and his family were bracing for it. So, this is a tough situation because I get where he is and what he needed to do here. But he does clarify, because there's been this controversy today about, is he changing his answer about the situation concerning why he chose to think about the politics of the moment? And so he addresses that issue as well. And okay. I think that's an important part of where we are here. I mean, you know, ultimately, unless he goes to jail, you know, he gets to tell his part of the story. He's not really going to be, too much of, you know, there isn't anything that isn't really out already in the public domain in terms of what his interaction was with the president. So, you know, has he spoiled, this is a question for other people, but, you know, has he spoiled his ability to be a witness in whatever has gone on here?
Why would he have done that? What has he done?
Well, because he's been, you know, talking about it publicly.
The publishing of the book?
Yeah, the publishing of the book and maybe some inconsistency in answers between the slight, and there's slight inconsistencies, but these inconsistencies are going to be made even bigger by those who wish to make it bigger. I don't know if you've noticed this, but the lawyers have gotten involved in this, John, and the lawyers I saw a little bit, I was watching last night, Hannity, waiting for his explanation of what went on there, and they had Joe DiGenova on, who at one point, you know, was being considered to be part of the Trump legal team, and then had to back out because he's conflicted out. And, you know, he basically, you know, they should be drawing and quartering James Comey by now. So it's a pretty, you know, you're going to see some pretty outlandish legal statements being made.
Well, it's funny to hear Sean Hannity having that kind of conversation, because I think even Alan Dershowitz told Hannity last night that he should have at least disclosed that Cohen was working for him as well.
Well, you know, 30 minutes before he was on Fox, he was on CNN. And he had said that on CNN. And I give Alan Dershowitz a ton of credit for saying it on CNN and then opening up with it on Fox, even in front of the guy that he was kind of dressing down for.
Yeah, so, right.
You know, that's at least, you know, Alan Dershowitz, you may not agree with him, but, you know, he's giving us his legal perspective on it. And he's in, you know, at least he's a guy who stood by his own, you know, his own rhetoric there. So I give him credit.
Do you think that Comey hurt his, I don't know if credibility is the right word, but I'll use that one, his credibility by writing as much as he did about Donald Trump's appearance and mannerisms? The snarkiness of it may distract from the seriousness of it.
I think to some degree it does. The Marco Rubio rule. If you try to go after Trump at his level, if you try to play that game with
right,
him,
right,
you're going to lose.
Right.
Right. And so when there's just, you got to stay above the thing. I mean, I guess you go back to Michelle Obama here, and if, you know, when they go low, you go high.
Right. So even if you do look at his hands, even if the first time you meet Donald Trump, you gaze down at his hands, really, I don't even know that I would. But if you did, I don't think you need to say it to George Stephanopoulos or put that in your book.
That's an FBI guy, though. Right, because he was describing in great detail.
No,
he was using his trained skills.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I'm telling you, that's how I looked at that.
For what purpose was there a handprints on a gun or in cement that we had to match?
I think that's just who he is.
Sure, he is. I'm saying, did he? Even if you do you think that helps?
Does he have to do
your
that?
Book?
That's fair.
Do you think that helps your persona? Because we don't know James Comey, and the president's painting him as a liar and a guy with an axe to grind. I think it hurts him when he
says
that.
That's all true. But it also creates more controversy around the book, and people get to, you know, this. If he'd gotten out, if he'd done like a total milquetoast kind of, well, he said this, but I don't know about that and this and that. I mean, no one would be talking about him today. So that's, you know, that's a little bit of the method of the madness of selling here. But listen, I don't blame him for trying to sell against the master salesman of the 21st century.
What time are you going to have James Comey on?
5:40 this afternoon.
Well, gee, a lot of people are in their cars listening at that time, bro. Why would you do it then? So 5:40.
5:40 p.m., the James Comey interview.
Oh. Hey, score for you guys. Score for WGN. Nice job, bro.
He does talk about WGN. So it's a good thing.
He does not.
He does.
Would you get... See, here's... If I had known that you were doing this, I would have gotten you to ask him, would he say... Hey, I'm James Comey, and when I'm in Chicago, I listen to John Williams.
Listen, if I had known I was doing this, the interview would have gone a little bit differently, too. So,
all right, buddy. Good job. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, we'll see you in about half an hour.
Yeah, Rokan will pop in here before he begins at 3 at 5:40 this afternoon. Tell your friends, WGN. This is John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, enjoying that as long as we can. Okay, so today is tax day. When the 15th falls on a Sunday, then the IRS, the federal government, gives you another day, which in my mind would be the 16th Monday. But for some reason, I think because of the weather, it was moved to Tuesday.
It's Patriots Day. So in Boston, when it's Patriots Day, that they move it to the next day.
That's right. So this is really the whole country then benefits because Patriots Day lined up with tax day in Boston?
Well, you're not benefiting if you put it off till today and you can't log on to the IRS.
Are people having trouble doing that?
Yeah, I don't know if you heard that.
No, I missed that in your news.
Yeah, their website is partially down. So you've been having a hard time being able to pay online or even file online.
Well, give people an extra day. I mean,
we're giving them two. How much more do they want?
As a taxpayer who technically is going to float you for a day or a week, I don't care.
The government said, according to ABC, that if they don't have it fixed by midnight, they won't penalize people, which is, you know, big.
If they don't have it fixed by midnight, they won't penalize people.
Right. Okay. So, in other words, you're saying if they make it impossible for you to pay, they won't blame you for not being able to pay.
Although
you could always write a check and plop it in the mail.
Really, you know what your obligation is to have... No, I think is it to have filed or to have paid?
To have filed.
Right. You need to... So, I believe the advice is, even if you can't pay, if you don't have the money or whatever, what you really want is to have your return postmarked by... Or time-stamped, if you're doing, digitally.
You could still pay, drop the check in the mail.
And then, you know, it could get like a week to get there. You didn't get it yet?
Let me send you another one. The IRS is insanely fast about processing your check if you put a check in the mail.
I know, but what I'm saying is if you want it to strictly be legal and you couldn't file electronically, you could print it out. Lick a stamp and put it in the mail like we...
I don't think you have to lick stamps anymore. They're like stickers.
Whatever.
Violetta, stop. Okay, so then you put it in the mail. But I think it's a concern, too, for people, Steve, if they think, but I don't have the $1,800 that I owe.
Well, that has nothing to do with the computer down, though. That's, you know, that's...
That was your problem before the computer went on.
Exactly.
Did I mention I'm getting a refund?
Is she live or are these just drops that you're playing?
This is the stream of consciousness, Violetta Podramatic, sort of spicing up our tax talk.
Mm.
You know,
are they as fast at paying you back as they are as processing your checks?
No, but I swear to God.
I think you have that on a drop. I think that's a cart.
So help me. I think there have been times where, like, we would put the check in, say, on Monday. Like, we would lick the stamp, put the check in the envelope, and put it in the mail Monday. And by Tuesday morning, that amount had been debited from our account. It's amazing how fast they are.
It's funny you say that because I have to pay estimated through the year sometimes.
Yeah.
And I find they're pretty slow in cashing those.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well, that's not been my experience or recollection. And now... But if they owe you, right, that check does not just come the next day. Like, even if you do it digitally, I don't understand how that is. If I file electronically, boop, you should then go beep. It should come right back. Here's your $1,800 or your $18, whatever you're owed, that should instantly appear in your account.
Well, there's a review process, right?
I don't think there is.
Yeah, I'm just always nervous that they're going to be like, no.
I don't think human eyeballs fall on everybody's tax return.
Well, when you file electronically, you get a notice that the IRS or the state has accepted your return. But then I think they still, I mean, there's...
I'll bet you for every 100 returns, are you and I having a conversation about how many human eyeballs review it?
Not human, but computers would...
Well, but okay, but if you file electronically, boop. That was my sound for a computer.
That it would go through it instantly.
Yeah, then it's brrr, it's done. Ding. Mm. And then it is, I don't know if
even the computers need a little time.
I don't think they do. If a computer is reading your income tax return and there's a number that's wrong, what's it going to think about it? It's like ding, it knows or it doesn't know. And if your thing is going to be accepted, you should get the return. When I get to be king, you get the return right now.
I've had returns accepted and then had an issue with them. Like if I've left an address off or a social security number back when the people were watching the kids.
Yeah.
So then I would get a call from the IRS or a letter.
Are you serious?
Gosh, yeah. It's making me sweat just thinking about it.
I think that's not the rule, Steve. I think you just got unlucky or lucky. But I mean, I'll bet 1 in 10 returns get reviewed. And if they saw something they weren't sure about on yours, then you may have had that conversation.
By a person.
By a human being.
Yeah, but if I filed mine electronically and in that box was blank, then they should not, in your standard, they would have never accepted it because there was a blank box.
Oh, you actually made a mistake. Right, yeah. Right. So then I think then if you file electronically and you make an error, I would expect the IRS to know that, yeah. And then that would initiate. But I think that's a computer that's noticing that.
Right, but they're not doing it instantly, I don't think.
Oh,
But why wouldn't they, I guess?
There's, Computers are instant. They're computers. It's digital. It's
because they don't want to pay you right away. Maybe they don't have the money.
Well, now I think we're getting somewhere. That's certainly what happens in Illinois. But I think the federal government should pay you right away. You know who's listening to this? I have three questions for an accountant. His name is Perrin Wetzel. He is a tax accountant at P.G. Wetzel & Associates, and he's on the phone. Perrin, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Do you want to say anything about the nonsense you've been listening to just now?
Well, it was an interesting conversation. So you had a few questions you said you wanted to ask me, and I wanted to make sure that I can answer those questions. And,
okay. I asked you three questions off the air. You had interesting answers. I thought we should just air those. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. You told me before we went on the air today that some people might want to file an extension, or if you have not yet filed, pay attention to PMI, the deduction for private mortgage insurance. Why? What's happened about that this year?
Okay, what happened is that law expired at the end of 2016, and when they passed the new tax law, they did not include that deduction in the new tax law. So in February, when they passed the budget on February, I think, 9th, they added that back in. So consequently, people who had filed their taxes early and they did not have that on their tax return, they did not receive that deduction. And they may have to file an amendment. That way they would receive additional refund back or less taxes.
I filed after February 9th, so this is news to me. But if I had filed before 8th, if I had filed on February 8th, technically, say that was the date of the passage of the tax bill, but if I had filed prior to that, you're telling me that, in fact, the fix would not have been in. I would not have had the deductibility of my PMI?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Well, not everybody has PMI anyway, but if you do, that's deductible. And if you file before the 9th, say, then you might have missed that. If you did, then what do?
Then you can file an amended tax return called a 1040X, and you have up to 3 years in order to go back and file an amended tax return.
And then
I've done a few of those myself and got people, you know, tens of thousands of dollars back.
Small businesses, you told me off the air, are maybe going to be in better shape next year as a result of the new tax law. Why?
The new tax law stipulated that what they call pass-through entities, which would be considered S-corporations as well as partnerships, would have to be able to deduct up to 20% of the net income without paying any taxes on it. For instance, if you made $100,000 in 2018, they would allow you to deduct $20,000 of that profit without being taxed on it, and therefore you would be paying less taxes on that.
All right, so you'd be at $80,000, and would be the amount that you'd be taxed.
Yes.
Is that new?
That's new for the new tax law. That's correct. That's one of the biggest things that they added to the tax law, was to help small businesses. And now is one of the best times to be a small business because of the fact that it's going to benefit small business tremendously in regard to taxes.
My accountant, Warren Winkler, and I were talking the other day, and he said, it's possible that next year, John, you will pay less in taxes than you paid this year, because I was complaining about how much I paid in taxes, as is my right. So I'm like, I swear to God, I'm voting for the wrong people, man. I can't believe how much I pay in taxes. He said, next year, I think you'll actually pay less. Are most people going to pay less or more next year?
Well, it depends on the type of income you have, as well as how many dependents you have. Like, for instance, this year, you received an exemption of $4,050 for every exemption, every dependent you had.
Right.
So if you had a family of, say, four children and two adults, that would be over $20,000 that you would have an exemption that would be exempt from your income. Well, next year they eliminated the exemption and they increased the standard deduction to $24,000. So if you had more than three children as well as two adults, then you would typically end up paying more taxes because of the fact that more of your income would be taxed as opposed to tax deductible.
So if I have seven kids, in the past I'd say, well, that's seven times 4,000, that's 28,000 right there for exemptions, but the everybody's going to just get $24,000 as their standard deduction?
Right, or if they have more itemized deduction, and that's another area where people would lose, especially in high tax states. For instance, if you have income taxes as well as real estate taxes, and they add up to be more than $10,000, they're only going to allow you to deduct $10,000 off your taxes. So any individuals that are in high income states, tax states, will end up probably paying more because they don't have those deductions. And now some of the states are trying to have a charitable contribution to the state in order to offset the taxes. And that's something that states are trying to look into. But that's a high risk, I think.
Charitable, they would call it a charitable contribution to the state? Is that what you said?
Yes. Yes, charitable contribution to the state as opposed to paying state taxes.
Perrin Wetzel is a tax accountant at PG Wetzel and Associates. Okay. I appreciate your time, Perrin. Good luck to you. I'm sure you're busy today. I'll let you go, but thanks for answering a few of those questions for us this afternoon.
All right. Thank you very much for having me on your show, John.
White Sox baseball tonight on WGN Radio. Then a day game tomorrow, so we'll only be on for an hour. Our pregame coverage starts a little after 2, first pitch 2:35. I'm wondering, here in Chicago, Cardinals are in town. Elif, what is the Rizzo forecast for the first pitch at, I think, 7 o'clock?
At 7 p.m. in Chicago, John, it will be 37 degrees Fahrenheit with winds at 7 miles an hour and sky cover of 38%.
38% clouds, so not a bad night. 37 degrees and kind of breezy.
What's the wind chill? Do we have that?
Yeah.
Did I miss that part?
What was the wind? Do the current condition, the 7 p.m. conditions again, Elif, and then we'll figure out what the wind chill factor is.
At 7 p.m. in Chicago, John, it will be 37 degrees Fahrenheit with winds at 7 miles an hour. And sky cover 38%.
Sky cover 38%.
How are you going to figure out the wind chill?
Oh, no, that's Elif's
job. I thought you knew that. I thought there was some sort of easy equation.
I can't help you, Violetta.
Yeah, you can. Find
there
out what.
There has to be an MX equals B minus T.
Calculating.
Thank you. 37 and 7. Let us know what the wind chill will be. Rizzo, just go easy. Bunt. You know, just bunt. Don't try and hit a home run. It's 256. You got it? Hit it. What is the wind chill factor when it's 37 and the wind is 7?
32 degrees.
All right. That's not terrible, but that still ain't 80 degrees now, is it?
No, that's not good correct. Baseball. I can tell you that.
Especially for a guy who missed the past couple weeks with a stiff back.
That's just what I'm talking about. If you said, I know, how can you throw out your back? You'd say, well, get on steroids and sneeze. But we've already done that.
I was not expecting that one. That was a Sosa thing, right?
Or just have a bad back and then wait until it's about 32 degrees outside and then twist your back as hard as you can with a stick in your hand. That's how you throw out your back. Lots of Starbucks calls. We'll finish that conversation tomorrow. Ro Khan in the studio at 5:40. I'm not making this up. His guest is James Comey. Okay, Ro Khan's here. Hooray, whatever.
Yeah, so what? Show. You know, like he's all
blah,
that.
Blah, blah, blah.
He thinks whatever. He's all that today, at least, yeah. Because of, you know, the thing that he pulled off today.
Yeah, whatever.
But we don't care.
Never been done before.
Doesn't matter.
Big interview.
I mean, who cares?
Big interviews
big
have
get.
Been done before. We've all gotten big gets, people.
Yeah.
Let's not all get mad
but you
now.
Got the get on the same day that all the networks got the
I had Todd Stroger on once. I don't know what you've
Oh, that
got.
Was great. That's really good, John.
Hey,
that's,
I forgot
awesome.
To read this commercial. Are you looking for a financial advisor who thinks of you as more than just dollars and cents? Someone who wants to know you as a person and understand your dreams and goals? Private Vista's team of advisors understands that financial planning is more than getting you from A to B. Their team of advisors excels in financial planning and investment management, but they also focus on helping you define your private vista. What do you want to do when you retire? And then they help you get there. Lots of firms are good with numbers. They do that. But then they help you lead a more fulfilling life. Get a free, no obligation consultation. Heck yeah. 630-455-0600. Call Private Vista, 630-455-0600. Or visit myprivatevista.com. Wealth management evolved. All right, well, I'll let you have this real good show of yours, so I'll just sign off. Have a good show.
It was an accident that I got James Comey. It was an accident.
I said to Elif, I said, we'll call the publisher.
Yeah.
Let's call some people.
Yeah.
Maybe Dick Durbin's people can
how
help
did
us.
Ro
I don't know how.
Khan get it?
And then Ro's like, well, I know people. Hey, I know people. I know you know people, but you don't get James Comey today.
I know, today. That's the thing.
That's
yeah.
The thing.
And I was supposed to be part of it, but I wasn't because it happened at the last second because he
called
in a favor.
There's a guy in Chicago named James Comey. It's not the same James Comey.
Yeah.
Tomorrow?
Not as impressive. Sorry,
you can have
John.
Him on? Yeah. All right.
All right.
I apologize to everybody. James Comey joining us at 5:40. 5:40 this afternoon. I had to do what I had to do. I was supposed to say, I did. I tried to talk a minute. We were supposed to do it tomorrow.
Together.
Wearing? Together.
I was so excited.
And they called me right after we had a video conference call with the station today. Yeah. And I was in my studio at Skywave Studios.
No big deal.
No big deal. And so for that. And the next thing you know, I've got this, the phone's ringing.
Oh, yeah.
The bat phone, which
Hi.
Never rings.
So it's James.
I pick up the phone and it's like, James Comey for Rokan. And I'm like, oh, God. Oh, no!
And you weren't even dressed, you said.
I was still in my underwear. I do the video conference without pants on. I didn't even tell people that. And then I'm like, oh, hold on. I tried to get the system up and going, and there was a piece broken. And luckily, because of our longstanding relationship with ABC News, the vice president of ABC News, Mr. Steve Jones, he texted me. I had to push it off. I had to go, we'll have to do it tomorrow. They go, we don't have any spots tomorrow, but I wasn't ready. And
like, I'm not ready.
I'm not ready for my close-up, sir.
that doesn't count.
Our dear friend Steve Jones was able to. He got on the phone with me, and we were able to reroute the system. He gave me 10 more minutes to get ready, and Comey sat there in his underwear, and then we were able to get the interview done. So.
I'm going to listen to that interview, and the whole time I am going to see two men standing in boxer shorts.
Yeah, that's exactly how that went.
In other parts of the country, going.
There'll be a different visual in your mind now,
right.
Won't there?
Have a good show.
At 5:40.